Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Come on, come on. Turn the radio on. It's Saturday and I won't be long.
Don't get me wrong. I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, this is going to likely be the most destructive fire in state history based on what I've seen over the last 12 to 24 hours. I've been coming in north on PCH. Keith came in from the south, and I can tell you, so this, the Pacific Ocean is literally right over there. These homes are right on the beach. There are three burning right now. As you can see, three others burned earlier. And as I came down PCH from the north, I had to see about two dozen homes burning along the beach.
That is just absolutely horrifying to watch. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. I spent last night, golly, was I up till 2 a.m.? I might have been up till 2 a.m. watching Twitter and, or X, I should say, just seeing the reports come in. And it's horrifying. This morning, I saw the reports that there are two people tragically who have lost their lives in this. But at the same time, I'm thinking, on the whole, it's amazing that it's only been two people. There are videos that you can watch on X about these fires in California. They are clearing out hospitals and homes for elderly. I don't know if they're nursing home or assisted living or whatever, but there is a blaze of fire in the mountains behind these buildings. And there is a whole wave of wheelchairs and hospital beds being relocated. I just cannot imagine it. I can't imagine it. We're going to watch and see if they give any further updates on the situation there. 100 plus mile an hour winds continuing to just dramatically make this fire situation an absolute catastrophe. This is a report from Fox 11 locally about the situation.
My heart goes out, obviously, to the people with their homes, and I'm watching the small businesses around us go up in flames. This is people's livelihoods, so it's devastating. But what is most concerning to me is our first responders and our firefighters who are trying to battle this. There's no water in the Palisades. There's no water coming out of the fire hydrants. This is an absolute mismanagement by the city. It's not the firefighters' fault, but it's by the city. And I'm going to be very honest. We've got a mayor that's out of the country, and we've got a city that's burning, and there's no resources to put out fires. So if you look at your pictures, you don't see the firefighters there because there's nothing they can do.
How tragic is that the mayor is out of town? You listen to that Fox 11 report, and you hear that the fire hydrants are out of water. I hate being in the middle of these types of situations and then finding out that there are massive government failures to prepare for something like this. And, you know, like, Brad, you and I here, Midwesterners, we know that tornadoes are happening.
Right.
So you prepare to some extent for whatever that might be, which essentially probably means you know in your house where you go when the warnings and the sirens start hitting.
Right. And you know, the government has a role to play in warning systems and stuff like
Make sure they function.
And they've done a pretty good job. But that's why, what is it, the second Tuesday of every month?
First Tuesday, where I am.
Yeah. You'll hear the sirens go off in your hometown probably around 10, 11 o'clock, something like that. And they test them.
Yeah. And so you know.
Yeah. And they've done a great job with increasing the amount of time that they give and all that other stuff. But like with wildfires, there's way more that a government
can do.
Well,
we also here in the Midwest would prepare for earthquakes. I know that the New Madrid Fault, I watched a YouTube video of that with my kids. Was that stupid? I don't know. I feel like, you know, more information is better. That's the way I live. If it's bad information, I still want the information. I can do something with it. I don't know that my kids always need to have it, but it was on YouTube and it was some sort of documentary. I watched that over the holiday break and it was talking about the fault line and when was the last time it was really bad and how everybody, you know, people don't look at the New Madrid fault, but people are always talking about the San Andreas fault. So you probably need to be prepared to some extent for an earthquake here. In my lifetime, I can think of feeling one, and that was within the last 10 years or so when that one took place. But you, whatever your region is, you have to prepare for a certain kind of natural occurrence of Mother Nature's wrath. Now, have you heard how this fire started?
I haven't heard.
I read on X that it was somebody's fireworks that started in a small fire, but that was on X. I don't know if that's true. Regardless, it's always the tiniest, smallest things in California that end up setting a whole massive amount of acreage on fire. How do you not have a plan for this? How are you not more prepared for this? There's also the possibility that it's you know, the act of God is so great that you could prepare for what is within the realm of your understanding of reality and possibility, but then the hand of God goes just a bit further. And I think also, if you look at the East Coast and you talk about hurricane preparation, when you see how Ron DeSantis and the people of Florida handle hurricanes, they are in the business of handling hurricanes. They know exactly what to do. They know exactly where government, just listen to Ron DeSantis talk about this as the governor. They know exactly where to step in, and they know exactly when to get the heck out of the way and let the people do the things that need to be done in order to get everything back up and running. Now, if you're in the mountains in North Carolina, apparently that's not somewhere that you're so prepared when it comes to hurricanes, because it doesn't really happen. Fires happen in California. That is the thing. You know, where else do they happen in the United States?
It's all West Coast fire.
In California is the whole West Coast.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part. Like them, Washington and Oregon.
Yeah.
But mainly down south because it's dry.
I don't think I've ever heard of a fire in Washington and Oregon the way people talk about it. It doesn't make the national news.
Not like this. Well, Oregon's rainy. You know, the Pacific Northwest is rainy and wet and damp, so it doesn't ever get to the extent that it does in Southern California.
So I'm reading live reports, and, you know, Elon Musk says this over and over and over again. You are the media now. When I'm laying in my bed in comfortable, snowy Midwest, taking in the firsthand experiences, visually seeing what it is that people trapped in their homes with fires ablaze, you know, these beautiful Palisades homes that have glass from the ceiling to the floor so you can see the beauty of everything that's around you. It's all on fire and they are there and they're videoing this so you can see what's actually happening. You can deduce what the situation is like there, but the question of what started it, who's responsible for it, was this beyond anybody's ability to prepare? The other reports that I'm seeing on X over and over and over again is they don't have the manpower to handle the situation because it's that big. And then, of course, what you hear there from that Fox 11 report, LA fire hydrants are out of water. You don't see firefighters there because there is nothing they can do. How do you get to that place? I don't want to bring politics into something in the moment when people are suffering and dealing with the tragedy as it is unfolding. So I'm going to play this and I'll, you know, let you decide for yourself. Gavin Newsom in California has a lot to say about the environment. There's a lot of regulation and burden that is placed on the people, the taxpayers of California, because he fancies himself quite the environmentalist. And I'm looking at what's going on in California and being like, you know, this isn't a brush fire burn that you implement in order to restore the environment where it is. People's livelihoods are going up in flames in a matter of minutes. Donald Trump, in 2018, President Donald Trump was in California, and this was after one of the fires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's on the ground, standing with Governor Newsom, and they're discussing the situation, how to handle it, how to manage it.
It's cleaned out and protected. You got to take care of the floors, you know, the floors of the forests, very important. You look at other countries where they do it differently, and it's a whole different story. I was with the president of Finland, and he said, we have a much different, we're a forest nation. He called it a forest nation. And they spend a lot of time on raking and cleaning and doing things, and they don't have any problem. And when it is, it's a very small problem. So I know everybody's looking at that, to that end, and it's going to work out.
When I think it was right before the election actually happened. Brad, do you remember we covered some of this? And it was kind of quite bizarre when Donald Trump was in California. I think it was a fundraiser of some kind. And he was standing on this plateau or something like that. Beautiful California landscape all around him. And he went nerddom.
Yes.
On water, access to water, preservation of water assets in California, and why the hell is Gavin Newsom redirecting all of this water into the ocean?
Yeah, he was talking about how, like, the snowpack is melting, and rather than putting it in reservoirs and stuff like that, we're so worried about the environment, we create concrete ductwork to just send
funnel
it straight
it
out to sea. You're talking about fresh water from, this is how California naturally gets its water supply, is snowpack that melts, big snow in the winter, snowpack melts, you get the water downstream. That's where all their rivers and everything comes
from. Gosh, it sounds like Joseph in Egypt. You're going to have snow in the winter. You're going to need it when you're dry in the non-winter months.
The thing that blows my mind is the absolute arrogance of people and thinking that we can control stuff like the climate. It's like, oh, we're having such a huge effect on the climate. You know, our efforts, it's looking like our efforts, at least our efforts in Southern California, are having a worse effect than anything else that we've done as humans out there. Like, we can maintain and be good stewards of the environment, but to say, hey, we can't build a dam because that would be unhelpful to whatever species they're trying to protect. At some point, you got to say, yeah, but like, now we're looking at fires that they don't have water for, allegedly. And those are people's lives, their livelihoods.
And the water isn't just needed for putting out massive fires. There's
right.
a plentiful amount of uses for it. I'm not smart enough to know the ins and outs of this, the details of it, but the damage, the horror of what is taking place visually, I can't believe only, at least the last report I heard, I cannot believe that only two people are dead.
It's amazing, because I told you in our private chat before the show, I was looking for video of the fire, and I just couldn't find anything with a reporter and talking. But
something that you can on the radio hear,
right? Yeah.
While we look at it.
But I was looking at this and scrolling through video after video after video, house after house after house, street after street after street, dash cams of people driving through what looks like hell with fire blowing over and embers going everywhere. It is the most surreal and terrifying thing I've ever seen. So yeah, if only two people have died, that's
yeah.
Amazing.
God be with their families, and Lord have mercy. If you've been continuing to watch it, we're not going to talk about it all day. It's a massive fire. It is a historical event. I've been to that area a couple times. I had a family member who I used to visit, an aunt that lived in Brentwood. And so I was able to, in high school, go out and visit that area. And it started to get to the point where, as the fire continued to progress, they started saying places that I'm like, oh, I remember that place, or I remember being there. I remember being up in the mountains. We would hike up the mountains, and one July 4th, we went up there and watched fireworks shoot off over the ocean. It was incredible. The location is incredible. These homes are very, very expensive homes. And I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of people living in the St. Louis region right now and a lot of the suburbs who have bigger and nicer homes. They're just not nestled into the mountains overlooking the ocean in a beautiful, beautiful climate. So the value of those homes there are so astronomical. The cost to rebuild this, the payout that is going to be coming from some insurance companies is going to be massive going forward. It's a true emergency in California, and every single one of your prayers that you can send up for these people to keep them safe and to give them peace is absolutely necessary. Joy Murdoch, who traditionally is on with us on Wednesdays at 105, is going to come talk to us in just about 5 minutes or so. He grew up in the Palisades.
Yeah, I messaged and I was asking, and yeah, he went to high school, Palisades High School, or whatever the high school is called out there. So,
well, there's a report, and I hope this isn't the one he went to, but the Palisades Charter High School has just been destroyed in the fire. And that is the high school that was featured in multiple Hollywood films like Carrie and Freaky Friday. So I don't know if that's the one he actually went to, but he knows this area very well. I think you said his parents are still there.
Well, his parents are in Southern California somewhere. I'm not sure
in the area
specifically where.
But he knows this landscape. He knows the climate, and he's going to talk to us from a very personal place. When we come back, we'll speak with Joy Murdoch. And then, of course, at 105, our friend Harris Faulkner is going to be back with us. And I'm going to talk to her about this. I'm going to ask her, too, about what it's like to report in under these circumstances, because the devastation is so incredible. The visuals are absolutely wild. And we'll find out from Harris Faulkner what that's like at 105.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
We'll be right back.
Los Angeles County is under mass evacuations right now as three wildfires tear through the area, leaving thousands of acres scorched. Dozens of homes and businesses are believed to have already been destroyed by the flames. Dire warnings have been issued, with officials saying there is an immediate threat to life in several towns.
Fox News Channel's Carly Shimkus giving that update, or that news, breaking news alert on the dramatic and chaotic and catastrophic event taking place in Southern California right now. The visuals of this fire sweeping over neighborhoods is nothing that I have ever seen before. And we want to talk to our friend Joy Murdoch about it right now. Joy, it's good to have you back on the show. Of course, you're a nationally syndicated columnist, a Fox News contributor, but these California wildfires, as I understand it, hit a bit close to home for you.
No doubt about that, Annie. Happy New Year. I don't know if that's really the appropriate phrase to use today, but it's the first we're speaking in 2025, and what an unfortunate start to the year we've had so far. And yeah, these fires are quite personal for me. I grew up in Los Angeles, as you may know, and specifically I went to Palisades High School, which is right in the middle of all the chaos and mayhem we're seeing right now. I'm not exactly certain what the status of Palisades High School is at the moment.
Is it the same as Palisades Charter High School, or is that different?
Correct. Same. When I was there, it was called Palisades High School, then it got changed to Palisades.
There's
became a charter school. So.
There's actually a Fox News alert that says that it has been destroyed, because it's listed as being featured in the movie Carrie and Freaky Friday, and it says that the fire has reached it. I'm sorry to say that to you.
Well, thanks for the update. It's obviously a constantly changing situation, but isn't Freaky Friday, and a number of other pictures. And it's a beautiful, was a beautiful campus, but because of the lovely weather, rather than being kind of a closed structure, you basically have these big terraces all over the place, and big wide hallways, and the classrooms, which open onto the big open air hallways and open air, terraces, verandas, and so on. So very physically open campus, lots of sunshine, palm trees. When I was there, class of 1982. I was there between 1979 and 1982. So we had, wonderful time, great weather, lovely. It was just almost like, a beach resort where they happen to have some classes. From the second floor classrooms, you could look down Temescal Canyon. You may have seen Temescal Canyon Road on some of the coverage, and look right down at Will Rogers Beach and see the waves crashing up on the shore. And some of the surfers would say, well, the waves are a little too big to miss, so we're just going to have to skip algebra class or whatever it might be and go down and surf for a couple hours and, come back and figure out some way to get an excuse from the parent or maybe falsify one or what have you. So anyway, it was a wonderful place to go to school and beautiful part of L.A., scenic and comfortable and lovely. And so it's just very, very it's excruciating to watch this footage and see that area so well just completely demolished.
Well, DeRoy, we're speaking, here in St. Louis. I was talking a little bit in our first segment about how we are very familiar with tornadoes. We are right on the New Madrid Fault. So we've been hearing forever, decades, about the big earthquake that is eventually going to happen. It hasn't happened yet, but it is a top of mind thing for people who are residentially here and have been for some time. I've never lived in California, but I have visited several times that area of the country. I got to think that people are aware of the threat existing of wildfires. And I'm wondering, should there have been more preparation to push back against what's happening? Or maybe it's possible that this is just so magnificently awful that it got out of hand before it could get under control.
Well, this is magnificently awful. It's unusual to have, it's not that unusual to have Santa Ana winds, which come in off the desert. Sometimes if they're low level, it can be quite lovely. You basically get days up in the 80s and 90s, but very, very dry. All the smog and marine layer and haze just blow off to sea, and you get incredibly beautiful, crisp days. You can see forever, and then at night you'd see, it's like being a planetarium, all the stars come out, and there's a very nice sort of almost static electricity kind of crackle in the air. If it's mild Santa, it's lovely. When it gets up into the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it's another story, and because of the very low humidity and the wind, fires break out, and then they just get turbocharged like what you're seeing right now. I think certainly what should have happened, and I guess has not been happening, is that there should be, in times where you don't have winds blowing, there should be controlled fires. They need to reduce brush, go in and take the vegetation out, and that kind of thing. And in many cases, that's just not been done in years or decades. And so you get all this potential fuel that catches fire, and you get what you're seeing on your TV screens today.
What is, these people who are fleeing, obviously there's well-established neighborhoods that are here. It's not like this is something that people there experience because they've been there for a long time. What does recovery look like for these folks who are losing everything other than, God willing, they manage to save their lives? What happens in the recovery here?
Listen, I've been hearing from friends of mine, enough people know the area, but basically Sunset Boulevard from Amalfi going all the way west to the coast, beautiful winding roads with mansions on either side, all that apparently has been burned to the ground. There's a Gelson's Market near Palisades High School, that's gone. There's a Ralph's, a whole bunch of other shops in other areas been burned down. Area below Sunset, Riviera Palisades going out down towards Chautauqua, if you know where that is. That apparently is burned to the ground. So, I think there are apparently 1,000 homes that have been destroyed. People, I guess, are going to try to rebuild, but that's a very expensive part of the of the city.
Yeah.
These homes start at $2 and $3 million on up. We'll see what happens with the insurance companies. If I were the president of Allstate or Mutual of Omaha, I would be biting my fingernails big time right now because these are going to be some major insurance claims. And, I think some people will rebuild and it's going to take a long time. But part of the beauty of that area is the old, many cases, old architecture, beautiful trees, lovely landscaping. It's going to take, years and years and years to put all that back in and have it look anywhere like it did yesterday or the day before.
DeRoy Murdoch speaking with us right now, Fox News contributor, nationally syndicated columnist, and also Project 21 ambassador. I want to talk to you about, not about necessarily politics leading into this catastrophe, but politics may have something to do with what happens after this catastrophe for people who are like, gosh, do I want to go down that route? Because if you were ever going to leave a place after all of this, this might be the thing that makes you say, all right, everything that I had here that is gone now, I'm going to have to reestablish roots. How do you, what is your advice to the governor of the state of California and the people who are running these more local governments right now? Because California doesn't seem to be the most, you know, comfortable financially, economically overregulated place to live.
You raise a very good point, Annie, which is if you have a situation like this, it gives people, it really puts them in the fork in the road. You know, do we want to spend the time and energy to clean up the mess, get permits, hire an architect, hire a contractor, build a house? Where are you going to live in the meantime? Do you sit in a hotel for 2 years while you rebuild your house, et cetera? Or do you say, you know what? Palm Beach is looking pretty good.
Yeah.
Or I'm off to Nashville. Or, gee, maybe it's time to go to Austin, whatever it might be. And I think a lot of people are going to have that choice. A lot of people will say, you know what? It's just not worth it. I'm out of here. Especially if you look at things like the lack of preparedness for the fires. Apparently, the reservoirs that feed the water hydrants have been not replenished quickly enough, so the firefighters are running out of water. The mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, so she's not downtown at City Hall. Maybe she's there now, but when this thing erupted, she wasn't even in California. She wasn't in the United States. She was in Ghana, of all places. A lot of people are like, okay, why are you in Ghana while we're burning the ground? So that lack of leadership, I think, will probably lead some people to get up and leave. I would say what I would say to Karen Bass and to Gavin Newsom, if you've got people who are in that situation, you want to give them every incentive to stick around. That means more easy access to permits, quicker approvals. If the decision is no, you can't build for whatever reason, at least give people a quick answer. And then, you know, we're thinking about it. And you can't get an answer one way or the other. Hopefully it's a yes, but if it's no, make it a quick no. And then make it as easy as possible to hire people, put people in place. And for those who want to rebuild, you know, don't make the road any steeper, make the road flatter for them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people like Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass are, you know, if they're wired that way, they're wired generally to say no rather than say yes, unfortunately. They're going to have to revisit that if they want to get people to stick around and rebuild as opposed to pack up and, you know, take the next flight to Florida, Texas, or Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to pack your things because the things are gone. I live.
Well, that's right. Nothing to pack.
Yeah. Droy, I live in the state of Illinois and I work here in the state of Missouri. And it's such a stark difference in the way business is done just from an Illinois regulatory process. You want to, you know, put a deck on your house. It's super complicated to do it in one side. It's less complicated to do it in another. Building homes and permitting. And, you know, I've been looking into building a home, and the kind of insulation you have to have in Illinois is different than what you have to have in Missouri. And Illinois, I sometimes feel like Illinois is the test kitchen for liberal left-leaning crazy because people don't pay attention to it here the way they might pay attention to it on the East Coast or in California. But if you want to talk about regulatory measures and like where do the ideas of what kind of stove you can have in your house or what kind of shower faucet can you have, this stuff all comes out of California. How do you build 1,000 new homes when all of this red tape is in the way? I think that there's going to be some sort of political reckoning that takes place in the wake of this, because in mass, we're going to see how punitive, over-regulatory babysitter government actually is.
Well, there are 2 points. One is, as you say, if people decide, you know, hey, we're going to stick around, we're going to rebuild, we really love the Palisades, we're going to make the effort to stay here, and then you've got to buy this particular stove and that particular refrigerator and this kind of dishwasher. Very often they're more expensive than the standard models, and they also often don't work as well as the standard models. So that's one problem. The other problem is when Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass should have been saying, okay, we want to get people up in the hills to cut that brush down,
yeah,
you know, peel back on the vegetation. You know, I mean, let's take the fuel out of there so that if we get a fire, it's a small fire, not an Armageddon. But instead of focus on that, we were focused on, oh, you have to have this kind of a shower, and you need to have electric vehicle mandates, and no, that dishwasher uses too much energy, and you need to have this kind of a microwave, and you got to have this kind of stove. And they spent all this time on, you know, let's make things quote unquote sustainable. Well, I'm looking at LA right now. It doesn't look like it's being sustained. It looks like it's being destroyed. I really wish these people focused on how do we keep this place safe and intact rather than engaging in sort of green virtue signaling, which now has led to a lot of black smoke and destruction and mayhem.
Yeah. And it'll be, I don't know if these governmental leaders have it in them. Their religion is their regulatory process is how they worship. And I don't know that they're going to have it in them to make it palatable. Now, you can't go to Tennessee and get the Palisades. I understand that. Mm-hmm. So the landscape, God willing, will be restored and people will be able to figure it out. But I think there will be a lot of interest going forward as to how they're able to build that without getting so much in the way of the poor people who are losing everything as we speak.
I really hope you're right about that. You know, again, as you were sort of both indicating, I don't know if those brain cells exist in the minds of Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass, and even beyond those two, the California state legislature, which makes Gavin Newsom look maybe a little bit like, maybe not Ronald Reagan, maybe like Mitt Romney. And I think the LA City Council is probably to the left of Karen Bass, which is pretty left.
That's wild.
So, you know, the legislators and local and state legislators are no better. But it may be perhaps in a situation like this, which is so devastating and so severe and so dramatic and so horrible, maybe they'll say, maybe we should take our boots off people's necks a little bit and let them breathe and hope that encourages them to stick around rather than, as you say, there's nothing to pack, it's all burned. Get on the next plane and, you know, move to the free state of Florida or something of the sort.
Deroy, last question before we let you go. We appreciate your time today. We've got, 12 days or something until Donald Trump is inaugurated? How much does it matter to the people of Southern California who is in that federal position to be of service?
Oh, I think a lot. I mean, there's certainly federal regulations that could be dialed back. And part of President reelect Trump's agenda is to restore the pace of deregulation that we saw in his first administration. So that's, I think, would provide a lot of potential assistance. He wants to get rid of all these, you know, gas stove mandates. If you want to have gas stove, you can buy a gas stove. So if you're rebuilding a house, you can spend money on less money for a gas stove that works, as opposed to a lot of money for an electric stove that's probably more expensive to install, more expensive to operate. But in addition to that, Donald J. Trump is a one-man bully pulpit. In addition to whatever he can do in terms of federal regulations, I'm sure he will make it very well and clearly known what he believes about the need for deregulation in California to rebuild from these fires. And if he can't do anything directly about what goes on in Sacramento and in LA City Hall, he certainly can make a lot of noise and give, shall we say, apply carrots as well as sticks to try to, forgive the pun, light fires under the derrieres of Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom.
Well, there is a lot to be happy about this new year, and unfortunately this story is not one of those things, but happy new year to you. We always love speaking with you, and God willing, they get this under control very quickly, and your hometown there, that it gets restored as quickly as possible without a whole lot of obstacles getting in the way.
That would be nice.
All right.
Very good.
Thank you, Deroy.
All right, Annie. Thanks very much. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Deroy Murdoch there, Fox News contributor, Project 21 ambassador, nationally syndicated columnist, and our friend here on The Annie Fry Show. Quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America with Ethan. It's a younger, smarter, better version. That's what we keep saying, at least this week. He looks a little skeptical right now, so maybe we're moving a little bit back into Ryan Wiggins territory. There's only one way to find out, and that's to not go anywhere. Go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We want to talk about this throughout the course of the show as well. We did discuss yesterday, there's like a 5-minute video from Mark Zuckerberg making commitments to you as somebody who uses Meta products like Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and whatever else he owns. But they're moving away from policing communication and speech the way they have before. And he said, we're going to do it a little bit more like Twitter, like X, like what Elon Musk has done. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, will Mark Zuckerberg make Facebook great again? Yes or no? Now, one little caveat for you. If you never thought Facebook was great in the beginning, that doesn't mean he can't make it great again. Do you think Mark Zuckerberg's going to do what he needs to do in order to make free speech feel comfortable on his platforms? Annie Fry YouTube channel, come say hi. And don't go away, because Ethan, in for Wiggins America.
Motoring in, drops it off, Scarbosi shoots, it's gone! Bring on the sweet, cuddly mayhem! Mike Scarbosa makes the fur fly! It's Teddy Bear Toss Bedlam in Hershey! A look at the replay on the goal from Scarbosa.
Wiggins!
Oh! Wiggins!
Teddy bear toss.
How about that transition right there? My goodness, was that
That was something.
That was, it almost could have been number 5th in the nation, but it was really in the line of number 6 midday show in the nation. You know why?
Why?
Because I didn't mean to play that video when it started playing. Well, so we rolled with it. This is a total Ryan Wiggins thing to do. Explain what just happened.
Accurate. Explain the mistake.
Yeah, but it sounded good.
It worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out. So what that was right there, if you were wondering, was the teddy bear toss, which is a very popular tradition in college sport, or correction, in minor league hockey.
Minor league.
It's in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the Hershey Bears hockey team. They do this annual teddy bear toss, and they broke their own record again this year. When the first goal of a game is scored, they pick a date every single year around this time of year, and when the first goal is scored, fans throw a stuffed animals as they brought with the game to them.
That's
out
amazing.
On the ice. And this year, any guesses as to the number of stuffed animals that made their way onto the ice at the home arena of the Hershey Bears hockey team this year?
800.
801. I'm going to go with 3,000.
102,343.
So then did they donate all of those?
They donate all of those, yes.
Like then. To a local, like what do they do with them?
I'm not sure what the specific, if it's toy drive or if it's to a hospital, but yes, they're put to good service.
That's
then.
Great.
So, and that got me thinking, like we need some feel good news. That's kind of the point of Wiggins America. A lot of crappy stuff going on right now, especially with all the heartbreaking information with the fire coming out. We need some good news. And I was looking into some of the best traditions, in sports. Because everything has to be involving sports when it's Ethan's America.
It is your America. It can be however you want.
Amen to that.
When you become the president, you can start renaming golfs around the country, around the world.
Golf of St. Louis Cardinals. Golf of
that's how we'll know when you've officially made it.
Yes.
Okay, I see.
The Hannah Fjord.
That was bad. So feel free to, if you guys have any like any traditions that you've seen from your teams. We have a lot of different teams
did
represented
you play
in
sports?
This room. Did I play sports?
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
What did you play?
I played in high school baseball and soccer. But also played other ones growing up.
What is, like, does Ethan have a sport?
Oh, it's baseball.
It's baseball.
Yes.
When did you start playing baseball?
I mean, it was probably 4 or 5.
When could I start
really,
walking?
Really young.
And when you played, did you play Little League? Did you go straight into, like, some sort of club ball?
I started with Boys and Girls Club Recreation.
Yeah.
Up until, like, 4th grade when I got into just select ball, low level select ball, and played select ball up until high school.
How long did you end up, like, how much of that time did it consume of your life when you were playing baseball? Like structure time, not
sure
how much you would put into it.
You mean just
season length?
That's a good question. I would say that, so the season would usually end, and I start with end for a reason, because that was much more like, okay, this is kind of the end of the year. Right around when school started was kind of when the season would end. End of July, beginning of August, then we'd have those few months off, and then we'd get into the new year, and we would start the winter practices. We'd start hitting again once or twice a week.
The way baseball works right now, very much so, is like your summer season, the final tournament of the season is July 4th.
Oh, really?
And then you've got like, I kind of, there's a part of me that liked it and there's a part of me that despised it, because I grew up playing City League softball, but that's what people did. That's what girls did. I mean, there was a City League softball and we had, I don't know, a dozen plus teams of at every level, and you'd play competitive softball.
Yeah.
And you played on Tuesdays, and you played from like maybe mid-May, usually started a little bit before school was out. And you were playing through August, but it was one game a week. Now, you played significantly less games that way than these teams who scrunch everything in the middle of, like, I don't know. They start playing in March, maybe. Just seems weird to me how that shifted. But when you get done, when these kids get done playing baseball around July 4th for the summer season, then they start practicing for their fall ball and, like, travel tournaments.
Yeah, I never played fall ball. And I think that was honestly a big reason as to why I was able to stay fresh on it, because it wasn't a year-round thing. Sports at that age should not be a year-round
baseball thing. Baseball and what
else? Soccer.
Gosh, I hate soccer. So I'm sorry, people. I know it's St. Louis.
It kind of transitioned perfectly, though, to where like soccer started right when baseball ended, mm-hmm. and it kept me very, very fresh on both those sports.
But when you start playing these sports as a young kid and you're participating in them, and then you see these traditions, it's just a way to pull you into different programs even more. I think that's really cool.
Totally, yeah.
Chicago has a tradition of throwing records out onto the was that what that was? White Sox?
The disco riot.
Disco riot. It's the same.
They had a disco sucks rally.
Do you know about the disco riot?
I think I've heard of it, but I'm not super familiar with it.
Nobody's super familiar with the Chicago White Sox.
That's fair.
Anyway.
It kind of reminds me of the seat cushion night that the Cardinals had in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. It's very similar.
Along those lines.
Tommy Herr. The walk-off home run and everyone's seat cushions.
That was in celebration.
Yeah, yes.
I don't think that the disco riot was in...
No, this is more Southside.
Yeah, this checks is a little out. Bit harder than, yeah, shockingly, St. Louis. Anyway.
Checks out. So there's a couple of really fun sports traditions that I thought were kind of cool to mention, and one of those was the teddy bear toss. There's another really cool one, and I think that these kind of things are even cooler when they come from lower level mm-hmm. organizations mm-hmm. or smaller schools, because it kind of becomes what you know these places by. And another one is Taylor University. If I were to ask you guys what Taylor University is,
nope.
Unless you were an alum, you probably wouldn't know. But they have this very popular tradition that started back in the late 1990s that they do right before Christmas, called the Silent Night Game. And what they do is
what sport is this?
This is basketball.
Basketball, yeah.
Good clarification there. So this is basketball. They stack this tiny gym full of fans to the brim. Super popular on campus. The students dress up crazy, just absolutely insane, all kinds of goofy costumes and outfits. It looks like Halloween in the stands. And from warm-ups to the start of the game to the point of where the 10th point is scored by the home team, it is silent. No words spoken.
Crazy.
So it's just, sellout crowd. Basketball game, college basketball being played.
Just a lot of sneaker squeaks.
Yes, and nothing but whistles and sneaker squeaks. And then, at the moment that the 10th point is scored, the fans go crazy. They storm the court, and it's absolute
they
mayhem.
They storm the court?
They storm the court. Yes, they literally stop the game.
Is this a fundraiser? I bet there's some sort
of... It's probably been turned into that. Now, this is a,
seems
I mean,
like that would be problematic for, like, if I, as somebody who has done officiating not for basketball but for volleyball but am related to many basketball officials, that would just be an abject nightmare. Then everybody starts running at you. We're like, run around time.
You're doing the team with the veterans. Like, have you done one of these silent night games before?
Yeah.
No? Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Don't tell them. Don't tell them.
So these fans absolutely erupt. They go crazy. They stop the game. I would say, visiting team runs to their sideline to get out of the way. And then it is literally like, if you watched an SEC football game and you saw, and there was a huge upset and the fans just go ballistic, that's exactly how it is. So this that's one of my favorite ones.
That's very cool.
And then following that, at the end of the game or near the end of the game, the student section breaks into song and they sing Silent Night together as the game is going on.
Very cool.
So this is that's another one of my favorites. Brad, you mentioned one I thought earlier that was pretty funny that I hadn't thought about, but that was what the Wrigley Field crazy fans do out in the outfield.
Yeah, everybody, when you think Wrigley Field, you think about throwing the ball back after the home run. Yeah, that's crazy. That's Wrigley. That's it. But there's another one where they just get together and they start stacking their beer cups and their drink cups together, and they see how long they can make this cup snake go. And it'll go in the bleachers, all the way up the bleachers, as high as they can get it, and over the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, that's a good one.
When it's in pro sports, a lot of times it's like I mean, no offense to the Chicago Cubs, because the Cardinals are like right there. Didn't we finish like one game apart from them last year?
Yeah, I mean, the last couple of years it's been really close.
A lot of these traditions in pro sports come from non-entertaining game situations.
Correct.
Like, what else could we do? I don't know. More beer and we'll stack the cups and see what we can come up with.
Those kind of things are fun. Another one that popped up was the Lambeau Leap, the Green Bay Packers, where after a touchdown, it has become a very famous thing for players to jump onto the front row of somewhere behind the end zone after scoring, and all the fans will like pat them on the helmet and celebrate with them. There is a lot of really good and really cool sports traditions out there, but I know I mentioned a professional one right there. I think that the ones that the smaller schools and the smaller organizations really take identity with are a lot more fun because it's more than just the identity, the brand.
Yeah. I think another whole conversation I think would be interesting too is like songs that are specific to, like, the St. Louis Blues, Country Roads, Sweet Caroline, Boston Red Sox.
Yep.
The Cardinals don't have one.
No, not really.
Are we above it?
No, I just think that
haven't had the right song yet.
It sticks with some and it doesn't with
just
others.
Basically anything that's by Nelly.
Basically. It's country grammar. That's what it is.
Harris Faulkner next.
Get more at 971talk.com.